Alan Shankman.
Yeah.
Linda Roche. I have Chun.
Yep.
Milton Muller.
Yep.
Ken Stubbs.
Hello.
Bruce, I think not. Correct. Gabriel, I think not. Greg, Sir Tony Harris, heard from. Greg Ruth, I think not. Tony Holmes, not. Jeff Newman.
Yep.
Carrie Carp. No, not coming with us. And Jordan.
Yes, indeed.
Yep. And we have from the at-large liaison, Wendy. Perfect. Okay, let's make a start. On last month's call, after last month's call, I attempted to put together a set of points of common agreement and a couple of areas for future debate, which I hope you've all been able to look at and share with colleagues. And in response to that, we've had some observations from the registries committee sent by Jeff Newman, and some further comments on that by Milton. I take it on behalf of the non-commercial constituency. What I propose doing now is just taking those points sequentially, and we'll see where there can be some clarifications and any changes that can be made. I think for me, most of them were quite positive points in terms of just clarifying what we'd already agreed. So perhaps if you're happy with that, we'll go through those first and then move on to the section I had indicated in terms of debate after that. So using Jeff Newman's email as a starting point, on the goals of expanding the namespace, points 2 and 5, points 2 referring to avoiding names that are confusing similar, and point 5 referring to IDNs, Jeff there had raised a clarification really in terms of what was probably meant by IDNs and transliteration in particular, which I thought was quite helpful wording and would be very happy to adopt. Is everybody else comfortable with that?
Well, as I indicated, I think that's a very complicated issue that I'm not really sure what is being proposed.
Yeah, Philip, can I go into
sure.
a little bit more
detail?
Clarify.
Yeah, do.
And also, I need to make a clarification on my statement, too. One of the registries.museum wanted me to state that with respect to a transliteration of let's say, a dot museum into another language, that they would not be opposed to having an ICANN award another dot museum, but in that other language, if that other dot museum agreed to follow the exact same policy structure as this dot museum follows.
Right.
So that, you know, you wouldn't want to have a dot museum in ASCII characters and a dot, you know, the same exact transliteration in Chinese, you know, on a generic basis not follow the same policies. Now, I happen to, and a number of the other registries disagree, and we feel that, especially with a sponsored TLD, that if there is a transliteration version that's going to be introduced, that it should only be allowed to be introduced by the current operator of that GTLD space because of differences in policies that could arise, differences in marketing and advertising, and really would cause confusion among the marketplace. so that's really what we were worried about seeing. Now, the whole comment was because of someone like, say, .museum, you know, if .travel is approved or .health, you wouldn't want the exact transliteration being introduced and not following the same policies, not having the same level of advertising and marketing, and so the registry constituency would be opposed to awarding it to someone other party, but they would like to allow it for the current operator so that it could apply the same policies going forward.
Yeah, I think that's That's very debatable. I don't think there's going to be consensus about that. Unfortunately, there's very few people on this committee who would represent the prospective operators of non-ASCII top-level domains. But let's take a specific example. I know that the Chinese version of what we would call .com is Gongzi, which is two Chinese characters that basically means public company. By the way, there's no such thing as a perfect transliteration of anything, certainly not in short top-level domains. Now, I have a difficult time understanding how one of the 1.2 billion people in China is going to be confused by seeing Chinese character .gongzi with .com.
Even though, Milton, my comment, in some sense,
can I just finish my sentence here?
Sure, but can you just address sponsored TLDs, not the com or biz, but like a dot .travel or, you know, ones that actually can be translated?
So you want to, are we restricting the discussion to sponsored top-level domains?
That's what this comment was restricted to, yes.
This is Ellen Maggett and Q.
Yes, indeed. I think just allow me to comment first. I think certainly it makes... I think given what Jeff was saying, you can understand that where there are certain policies being applied in a name that the nature of confusion, which I say the point that what we're not looking here is unnecessary limitation, but we're just looking here at a test of confusion.
Well, I guess they still have to see how somebody who doesn't speak English and somebody who doesn't speak Chinese is confused by seeing domain names that, for somebody who speaks both of those languages, might mean something similar, but for most of the world, they're in completely different scripts, and one of them is meaningless and the other one is not.
I think we need to assume that increasingly we'll have a world where people are fully understanding different languages and different scripts. But anyway, Ellen, you were in queue.
Yeah, this is George. Can I get in the queue after Ellen?
The question with Jeff, I also cannot say that I think that there's an immediate consensus, Jeff, on your point, because are you also assuming that whoever is the current operator of an IDN is capable of handling all the technical requirements or anything else that comes up under the ASCII? I mean, the non-ASCII symbols?
I'm not saying that I can't.
Because somebody who's been granted, for example, the dot museum or the dot whatever now, are you assuming that they can, you know, that it should be taken as an assumption for granted that they can handle?
No, not at all. I mean, they have to. The operator now or anyone in the future needs to demonstrate an IDN capability before they can introduce it. But they shouldn't award the non-ASCII version of dot, you know, arrow to another party, that they should first give the opportunity to that incumbent registry to so that it can apply the same policies and procedures. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they automatically can introduce it without demonstrating all the other requirements for IDN.
But they should have sort of right of first option as far as you're concerned.
Right. I mean, these registries, you know, spend a lot of money and time establishing these policies and trying to enforce them. You'd hate to have another entity out there with a non-ASCII version that doesn't follow the same policies.
Jordan, you're on cue.
Yes, I think we're actually getting a little far afield from the intent of the statement when we talk about transliteration versus translation. I think the example that Milton brought up earlier of comparing Gongxi to Com is a translation, not a transliteration. A transliteration is when you have the same word essentially written out separately. So, I mean, the most obvious example where this could be confusing is if you took an example of a script that had like the combined AE character, and you wrote out dot arrow as dot combined AE character dot RO versus AERO. Those are incredibly similar, even to the, you know, naked eye. And I think that there's a high chance of confusion there, whereas if we talk about translating the word arrow into Chinese, probably there's a very low chance of confusion. And so I think the intent of the statement is to discuss cases where we're transliterating ASCII strings as opposed to translating the actual meaning of the word into another language.
game. June, go ahead.
Yeah. Basically, I think when we decided to introduce internationalize the domain name, we first take into account the users who are using internet in non-English speaking countries, such countries. In that case, all of those users who are using non-English characters, for them, there is no confusing in this case, even in translation or transliteration cases. In any cases, they don't feel any confusion there. So now, why we are talking about such a confusion problems here, we have already decided to allow internationalize the domain name at the namespace. In means, we welcome to those non-English speaker users. So they're using those languages primarily rather than ASCII languages. Then why they are confusing?
Yes.
Would you put me in the queue, please?
Oh, indeed, can you? But, June, would you agree that if we were to find a case where there is confusion, that it is a good objective to try to avoid confusion, even if it's an international name, an IDN registered first, and then the English language or the ASCII equivalent is then confusing to that? Do you think I can understand that if there's no confusion, then we don't have a problem because we're talking about confusion? But if there's a case where we find confusion, would you agree it's a good objective to try to avoid that?
That's a different point. As I already wrote that point in my previous email message, I think basically the notion of confusion is similar is something to do with trademark rights. Then, in this case, we are talking about a generic top-level domain. Then, general names are simply generic. General names cannot be applied to any kind of trademark-related regions. Then, why confusion similar is problematic in generating new entities? So, basically, I don't agree to the point two.
Okay, but I would agree with you that we're not looking at covering anything to do with trademarks on this point. Anyway, Ken, you are next in the queue.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I'm getting confused, but let me take it back to the most basic with respect to the restricted TLD. It would seem to me that if we are establishing a TLD for, let's say, for a museum, for a library, for a restricted use, that the standards for the right to use, to right to register in those TLDs should be consistent regardless of whether or not it is an ASCII TLD or an IDN internationalized. All we're doing is allowing the use of the second level within the TLD in a character set that is different than ASCII. The standards and what it should mean in terms of the use of the TLD should be consistent all the way across the line. I'm hoping that we're not talking about establishing different standards for something that in effect is supposed to mean the same, the TLD is supposed to mean the same regardless of the way that the character set is used.
Could I get in the queue?
Yes, Andy Milton. Go ahead.
Nobody else?
Yep.
I think we might be able to simply duck this issue at this time. I understand that when Jeff says that he's talking about sponsored TLDs, there's a slightly stronger case for what he's saying, but I really still disagree because I think we are taking a global perspective on what is bound to end up as a local or regional issue in terms of what meaning and what uses these domains have, and I think we don't want to impose a global perspective on on these things at this point. But if I recall what we're supposed to be doing in this committee, I don't quite understand why we are even confronting this issue yet. As I recall, we are asked to answer two very simple questions, whether the namespace should be structured, which most of us understood to mean a taxonomy. And it seems to me that our consensus answer is no. And then the other question was, if it should be structured, what should the structure be? And since we answered the first question no, we don't really need to answer the second question. So
your logic is
impeccable. Detailed questions of IDNs, which are a thicket of very difficult problems that we don't really need to get into yet.
Okay, Milton, I need to comment. I mean, your logic is impeccable if indeed the answer to the first question was simply no, and we didn't wish to give any further guidance to the board. But I think probably the general feeling of the group is that we would like to try to give some guidance based on the perfection or the imperfection of the questions they have asked us.
Ellen,
indeed, what I was going to propose on this particular point, though, is that I think we've had some quite good discussion, and what I would volunteer to do is try to rephrase our point five here, and maybe incorporating two. To capture the feeling of that there, and we can perhaps look at that wording subsequently. But Ellen, go ahead quickly if you want to on the same point.
Thank you. Maybe I didn't understand exactly what the nature of taxonomy means, but I thought that while we didn't want to give all sorts of details about lots of structure things notwithstanding, I understood that the consensus was that there were certain fundamental guidelines that we did want to give, and I just wanted to support that. I thought what Ken said about treating IDNs as just a character difference rather, you know, that the standards can be consistent made sense to me.
Yeah. Okay. Can we move on to point six? This was talking about drivers of expansion, and I use the phrase demand-driven. And Jeff, you were asking a series of questions to say, which I think essentially was saying was just how loaded is the phrase demand-driven. And I think my, as far as I'm aware, the feeling of the call was that we were all thinking along the same lines that you're hinting at, I think, in your questions. Nobody's suggesting that there should be any judgment as to what the future demand of the namespace would be. But it may be helpful perhaps to think of some wording that would clarify that. And I was wondering if something like we should say demand driven by those who believe a future demand would exist for the proposed GTLD. I think that's all we're really saying there. It was just to say demand-driven rather than top-down, restricted supply-driven, which would be the concept of a predetermined list of names that we didn't support.
I guess the only issue that we have with that is, and it was good to have Milton's note back because that shows that, you know, we interpreted it one way and Milton had said that that's completely not the way that he meant it. But our issue is that when you say something needs to be demand-driven, the point that we had is, well, maybe there's someone who's willing to take the risk that there is no demand at this point, but they're willing to spend the money and the marketing to drive demand in the future.
Yep.
And so to say that it needs to be demand-driven is almost implying that someone needs to show through a market study and needs to show that there's already existing demand. And I'm not sure how we get around it with wording, but that was just kind of our thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think certainly my own feeling is I agree with you. We're not trying to make that restriction, and I'm not hearing anybody else, I don't think, am I writing, saying to the committee nobody's proposing that either.
Right. We had some wording in the non-commercial statement that said something about willing suppliers reacting to perceived needs in the marketplace that might be usable.
Okay, I'll check on that and see what we can do on the next draft. Point number seven. Jeff, you were asking a question concerning the meaning of the last part of seven. 7 refers to the fact that registry could operate multiple GTLDs. Single registry not be linked uniquely with one name. And then there's a second phrase there which refers to competition. I think the objective we're trying to say there is that we a single registry operating multiple GTLDs, one might want to limit if that was leading to an increasingly dominant market share. I think that was probably the concept behind that.
Right.
With that clarification, would you be happy with the wording as is?
Well, our concern is that when looking at a registry, let's take sponsored TLDs for example. It's possible that you can have 100 different sponsors, but each of those sponsors seek the same few back-end registries. Just by, you know, them going and seeking out the registry, the back-end. And what we would hate to see is if there is a good sponsor TLD that goes to, let's say, Affilius as a back-end, or even Newstar, New Level as a back-end, you know, we would hate that to count against the actual sponsor, who's the real entity that's running the registry, if you will.
Jeff, please clarify what you mean by back-end.
Well, let's take a dot, and this is not one that's... Dot Museum has got a back-end. I believe Core is their back-end provider, which means that Dot Museum has Musidoma, who does all the policy work, does all the marketing, does all the advertising, does everything with respect to the front-end office, you know, the billing and the collections. But you have the registry, Core, providing the... technical services, so providing the EPP protocol, providing the systems, and it's basically outsourcing of the back end. And there's a lot of sponsored TLDs that will use an already existing back end so that they don't have to spend the money to develop the infrastructure.
And you think that the issue on dominant market share that Philip raised is irrelevant in that case?
I do think that a sponsor should not be judged by who their back end is. If it's true, if that sponsor is a true sponsor, yes. Because otherwise what you're doing is you're forcing a lot of these sponsors, you're creating a barrier to entry because you're forcing these sponsors to come up with their own systems, which could cost... I mean, you take it from me and from anyone that's operated a registry, it can cost a significant amount of money to build a technical back-end system.
Sure. I think it's a question of degree. And the intent that we're expressing here, I think, is avoidance of dominance in the supply of registry services. And I think what you're saying is that you're concerned that... ICANN may overzealously judge the start of dominance and unduly affect some of the incumbent suppliers, which I don't think is the intent here.
Right, but I mean, even if you look, if you go back, and this is a personal issue with Newstar, if you go back to the selection of the first round, now there was a proposal out there for a .geo, and I don't remember, I don't know how many people remember that.
That what?
A .geo, G-E-O, for a geographically... basically a unique idea for the DNS system of geographic designations. We were the back end for them. We just were providing the SRS system for them. But they were doing everything else. And the ICANN board said, well, you know, Newstar already has a registry, so, you know, we're not going to allow .geo to go forward. That should never happen again. Especially if the main part of the registry is the actual sponsor, and it's just like it's like outsourcing. You know, a lot of people buy Microsoft systems to do their back end or to operate their computers, but that doesn't mean that anybody that uses Microsoft to operate the back end, you know, should be eliminated because that quote would reduce the competition in registry services.
Philip, can I get in the queue, please?
Yes, indeed. I was just about to take a queue. So that's Marilyn. Who else?
Milton.
Who else? Okay, Marilyn, go ahead.
Let me offer a slightly, I'm not I'm not disagreeing with what's been said, but I want to offer a slightly different perspective about the concerns about dominance in any particular sector, and it has to do with creating critical points of failure. And so there's a tension to what Jeff has described of you might create a critical point of failure because there's not sufficient aggregated business to support the large infrastructure that's required to operate a large and complex registry with a very high number of registrations. And one way to deal with that would be to have smaller aggregates of sponsored TLDs that can be supplied or supported by a large registry. But you have to also think about the issue of creating critical points of failure because there is no redundancy or additional supply available in the infrastructure. And certainly that's something that's been, you know, that's thought about a lot and has been looked at a lot in the telecommunications infrastructure where So I think there's a tension here, but a way to balance what we're saying that sort of meets much of what Jeff is saying, but also keeps an awareness that additional suppliers in the market also prevent against other kinds of failure, which might mean there's no safe harbor or no place to turn to in the event of the failure of a particularly, you know, significant supplier for one reason or another. And I think that model of, you know, several sort of like, I might call them sunflower-like infrastructures of different sizes, some might be very large, some and might do a lot of outsourcing, some might be not so large and just concentrate on a particular niche. But Jeff is right. Infrastructure of the nature he's talking about does cost money to build and to operate.
Okay, Mary, thanks for that. Embleton.
Yeah, I think this is not a problem if we have open entry process for the TLD space. I agree fundamentally with what Jeff is saying, that if you are a prospective sponsor of a top-level domain, or if you are not even a sponsored domain, you ought to have a choice of who your registry back-end provider is. This is called the marketplace, and we have, you know, we have to let people choose who they think is the best service provider. Now, the problem of dominance, I don't see that these choices will lead to a problem of dominance. What I see as very obviously the problem of restricted and barriers to entry is caused by the fact that ICANN has not allowed people to enter the TLD market, that ICANN has simply allowed two or three new operators over the course of 5 years, and there is no defined process for new players to get into the market. That's the problem with dominance. If new and particularly small TLDs want to rely on existing infrastructure, that's their choice, and it probably makes a lot of economic sense. I think there are enormous economies of scale in registry operations, so that adding another dot museum to the infrastructure of VeriSign or Core, for example, is just makes good economic sense. So, you know, dominance, if we want to address dominance, let's talk about having a regular procedure for entry and not about ICANN deciding who has too much market share.
Okay, I think the flavor of what we want need to change here is clear, because I think certainly there's no objective to constrain sponsors' choice in terms of who they may like, and I think the point that Jeff made earlier about that itself made it a barrier to entry is also important. So let me try and capture that on the next round. Before we leave item 7, though, I think, Milton, you also raised a point about on phrasing. You were saying that the phrasing registry not be linked uniquely with one name was ambiguous. I mean, you can see, I take it you understand the objective we're trying to capture with that phrase. Did you have some text alternatives? Would it be better?
No, I guess I'm not sure what is the objective you're trying to achieve with that phrase.
Okay. I think it refers back to, if you like, sort of the first days or first rounds in terms of names, where typically a registry will be associated with one name only in terms of the bid they made to ICANN, and different registries will come up with different names in that round, and we're just saying the world in the future is probably going to be different.
Well, yes. For example, in the auction procedure that we proposed, you know, you can submit into the auction 30 different names if you're willing to pay for that, and then you can end up getting a maximum of two successfully out of the auction. And there's no reason why incumbents shouldn't build up a reputable up-level domains, if that's what you mean.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. Okay, point eight has to do with sponsors, and Jeff, you also had a question about that. Are you just suggesting that we shouldn't, you were just suggesting some very cautious wording to the extent that a TLD is sponsored and then referring to
what our concern was that this paper basically, by having the number eight, was almost implying that there would only be sponsored TLDs in the future. And I think we need to be careful not to imply that.
That's fine. It's always good to have lawyers on the team rather than just...
Except for Philip, this is Ellen.
Yes.
I hope this isn't opening the discussion again on whether or not we think that that non-sponsored TLDs or all open TLDs will be. I mean, as much as I want to suggest that there may be other ones, if this is going out as our recommendations of what should be, again, our recommendation is that the new TLDs, any new TLD should be sponsored ones.
Yeah, that's your constituency's views are recorded. Thanks. So that's eight. Done. Nine. So this is on the technical and financial qualifications. And here you are really saying, what do we mean by all this? And in fact, I think nine already had a little asterisk by it while we're waiting for the very busy ICANN General Counsel to provide us clarification. We don't have it yet. I think what we're saying there is as I understand it, nothing more than we have at the moment. But perhaps the registries or the registrars can comment on that.
Well, my comment would be that I think ICANN did, in .org, did a not-so-admirable job in trying to determine financial competence, in that it oftentimes listened to people outside the... I don't mean the experts, because that's okay to listen to the experts, but oftentimes listen to public comment as to whether a company was or was not financially competent. The truth is that measuring financial competence is incredibly difficult. And, and what does that mean? Financial competence for one TLD is completely different than financial competence for another. Who determines that? How is that determined objectively? And if you have an outside agency determine it, then you're talking about increased costs to apply for a TLD. I mean, there's just, I think that ICANN should not be afraid to have TLDs that fail. I mean, that's my personal belief, that if a TLD fails, it's okay.
So are you arguing, Jordan, then, that there should be no demonstration of financial competence?
Well, this is Jeff. I'm sorry.
So, Jeff, I beg your pardon.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, if we're going to make it a requirement, then you need to be a lot more clear than just saying demonstrate financial competence, because otherwise you're just leaving it to someone's sole discretion.
But something seemed to be done in the .org process which was different to past practice. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying yes. .org, it allowed people outside the organization who weren't experts to comment on someone's financial competence without knowledge.
Okay.
This is Ellen.
Comment on this. Ellen, yes. Sorry, just take a list before you speak. Ellen, who was that?
Ken, put me in the case.
Ken, yep. Okay, anybody else?
I don't know if I can agree that I think that ICANN shouldn't be afraid to have TLDs fail. I mean, I thought that part of what we're here to try and do is to make sure that the system stays reliable and stable and that people who sign on for it can know that what they've got works. So what do you mean that we shouldn't be afraid to have TLDs that fail? You know, to say that you have a TLD that maybe nobody wants to sign up for, or to say that, go ahead, let these domain, most end users, domain name registrants who don't know better, who rely on ICANN, in fact, to help take care of them, to make sure that the system works. So what do you mean that we shouldn't be afraid to have TLDs fail?
To address that, what I mean is that At some point, you have to let the market work out what's going to happen. In other words, you know, let me just take a quick example. I had, you know, to go into the ISP business here, I had an ISP at home. It was called At Home. you know, I got an email one day that said, you know what, sorry, we're closing shop. You need to find a new ISP. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It was a little bit of an inconvenience, but I had to find a new ISP to do my, you know, a new DSL service. But it was a little inconvenient. But the point I'm making is that if ICANN goes out of its way too much out of its way to make sure that something doesn't fail and puts that obligation on others, it's going to be an awfully costly business to get into. And I'm not sure that that's one of our objectives.
So again, this is the barrier to entry argument, isn't it? We need to be reasonable in any safeguards that are linked to an objective of stability to make sure that we're not setting up barriers to entry.
Right. All economic.
That may be, but I also don't think that we have that we can say that there should be no safeguards and let the market forces do. But in fact, I think it is our job to make sure that if we're dedicated to helping make sure the stability, that we don't just let any riffraff run a registry just because they, you know, register up because they want to.
All right. Okay. Ken, you're on the list, and was somebody else asking to go on the list?
Yes, Wendy.
And Wendy, please.
Okay, and then Jordan. Ken, go ahead.
Yeah. We have a few people on here who have some sort of affiliation with the telco business. It just doesn't sound to me. At least to me, I analogize a top-level domain with a form of telecommunication services, and it seems to me that it would be irresponsible to allow a top-level domain to go into existence knowing that there is a possibility that it won't be able to continue. Because then there is some sort of presumption of reliance that somebody would step in and pick it up if it went south or went sour, or the other presumption is that if it isn't able to make it because of market forces, that it's just going to go dormant and go dark. And it would seem to me that a significant number of people are going to purchase service contracts at the second level in anticipation of making significant investments in marketing and so forth to develop a business that in effect gives them an access through a top level domain in which they have an expectation is going to be in existence and available for their consumers to use in the future. And to me, it just doesn't seem to be responsible to allow somebody to go into business knowing that there is a probability that it isn't going to work. I consider a top-level domain to an end user to be somewhat of an essential service. I think,
did I get in the queue?
That's yep. my feelings, at least.
Okay, Ken, thank you for that. I think.
By the way, I got to qualify that. That's a statement from me, not necessarily from the registrar constituency, because we're getting into areas that, frankly, the registrars haven't had a chance to.
Okay.
Put me in queue too, please, Tony Harris.
And Jeff Newman at as well.
Okay, so in this long queue, we have Wendy next.
Sure. So it strikes me that it's helpful to distinguish between two kinds of stability. One is the stability of the overall domain name system, and I don't think anyone's proposing that we introduce new top-level domains that would compromise the stability there. But the stability of an individual domain, I think, is more flexible, and people are given the right expectations going in, i.e. that a domain name isn't necessarily permanent, but they should be judging how stable they think it is as they decide whether the place to base their business, then we can be more flexible. If we insist on prejudging the new top-level domains and only permit those that we think will last for 100 years, I think this too high a barrier, and we could guarantee that by not introducing any more. But if we want to keep the realistic possibility of introducing new domains, and if we want to call this a market system, I think the market does have to be open to the possibility that a bad competitor will come in and will fail, because it can't survive the competition.
Philip, I wouldn't ask to step in, but I would like to respond directly to what you just said rather than four cues down the line.
Jordan, it's up to you. You're next in line.
Yeah, let him go ahead and respond.
Go on then.
Yeah. You're assuming that the consumer has a level of expertise or knowledge that will allow them to discriminate between whether or not a service that's being provided is in fact stable or not. My presumption is that anything that goes into the root system in the form of a top-level domain, the presumption is stability, and that there will be some sort of permanence there. And I don't think that the level of sophistication of the end users is high enough at this point in time to assume that if somebody offers them a contract in a top-level domain, that they're going to be able to judge, well, now, wait a minute, this is .fuzz, and, you know, I don't know whether .fuzz is as stable as .com. There's a difference between stability and the ability to market or recognizability. That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Ken. You're almost sort of raising the point about, you know, does a design can have a duty of care in its activities to do.
Yeah, when somebody offers a new area code, is the presumption that the area code, that the phone system is stable enough that I can use it? Or do I have to I hope you understand what I'm saying there. Maybe
that's a bad analogy, Ken, but I can
know,
talk about it later.
Let's turn to my list, if we will. Jordan, you're next.
Yes, sure. I think there's actually two kinds of, when we look at the failure of a TLD, we can really look at two different modes of failure, one of which I think is vastly more damaging to the consumer than the other. The first failure mode, and the really bad one, would be if the TLD disappeared from the face of the earth, existing domain names stopped resolving, and essentially the domain name that you had built that you had come to rely upon ceased to exist all of a sudden. I think we can all agree that's probably not a great outcome. It's arguable whether or not we have a duty to protect the consumer from that outcome beyond, just making sure that we have good transparency. But regardless of that, I think that's an incredibly unlikely outcome. The far more likely failure is that a registry goes out of business. The zone file is basically in the public domain. ICANN certainly has data escrow requirements from all of the registry operators. So it's trivially easy to allow the DNS for that domain to continue to operate and to resolve, and for people to slowly, essentially, phase out their use of a particular top-level domain name over a course of time. And it might even be possible that ICANN could somehow bring about the transfer of the top-level domain name to a new operator. That's something we had discussed on a previous call, actually, was the fact that if a registry operator was no longer able to fulfill its obligations under the contract, to make it clear that the registry is not the property of the operator, but could be reassigned to an appropriate new operator. So I think when we talk about allowing registries to fail, what we're saying is we're allowing business models to fail that really, at the end of the day, doesn't put consumers at an incredible amount of risk. There may be a short period of time in which updates couldn't be made to a zone file, but likely the zone file would continue to resolve. And in the long run, likely even the functionality of the TLD would simply be transferred to a new operator.
Okay, thank you for this level of technical reassurance. Milton, you're next in line.
This is Carrie here. I just want to let you know I've joined the call. Sorry to be late.
Nice to have you with us. Milton.
I just want to point out how unrealistic it is to think that you can know anything serious about prospects of failure at the point of entry, at the initial point of entry when you're judging who gets into the market or not. It just seems to me to be self-evidently absurd to think that you can know very much about what's going to happen further down the road in the market. The most disastrous failures, if they occurred, would be ones that had occurred with registries built up large customer bases, such as an internet service provider, and that would be taking place over a matter of years. And you simply don't know the financial condition of these companies is going to be 5 years down the road. It may be that the companies that look
in this login at all, or just taking steps, so.
When they propose into the market, are simply, they'll have too many resources and are squandering them and become bankrupt 2 or 3 years down the road. Whereas a company that consists of one person in a room, and you can in fact run a TLD registry with one person, if it's a small one, may be perfectly sound financially. So I don't think that's a valid criterion for entry. And
this is Ellen. Can I get the computer response now, please?
The point I want to make here is that a lot of the problems we're talking about have to do with the fact that we're relying on beauty contests for entry rather than more rational procedures like auctions. When a beauty contest consists of a bunch of promises on paper that are ultimately meaningless in the long term, and if we had a more rational entry procedure...
Philip, can I get in the queue too, please?
Yeah.
If we also had these kinds of escrow procedures that Jordan was referring to, I think this is not a serious problem.
Okay, and next to that, Tony Harris, you're next in the queue.
Very short. I think I read often that domain names are equated to real estate. Real estate obviously doesn't fade into oblivion. And my second comment would be, I think your point 11, if you join it to point 9, which we're discussing, may resolve the question, and everything else has already been said.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. Indeed, we are straying into points 11 and 12 in this discussion. Jeff Newman, you're next.
Yeah, I just wanted to go on the record, because it seemed like my comments were taking a little out of proportion. I'm not saying that some level of financial competence need not be demonstrated. I just, it's just such a tough concept, and it's so ambiguous. I'm not sure how it's determined objectively, who makes the determinations, what kind of sliding scales allow, you know, is used, and how different models are measured. But also, I really want to drive home the point that Jordan made by an example. For those that are worried of TLD failure, Newstar transition.us, the existing registrations, now granted it was only about 30,000 existing registrations, but all we had to do was take the zone file, plug it into our system, and within an hour, we had everyone that was, you know, of course we did it on a backup basis, but within an hour, we had that completely into our system, and everything was resolving, nothing changed. The only thing that changes is whether you can add a name, delete a name, modify a name, or transfer to another registrar. Those are the things that take a little bit longer to transition. But everything else can be done almost instantaneously, very easy, by just having a copy of the zone file. So I think it's extremely important that that be known, because I think people are taking a little bit out of proportion as to what a failure actually means. And the last point is, Milton, this is a personal comment, not from the constituency, but I think an auction model is a very poor way to go, but that's a topic for another day.
Okay, indeed. Jeff, I think the point you make is interesting. I think to some extent what we're arguing here is strategies to prevent failure rather than an aspiration or an objective to try to protect registrars and consequences of failure. And what we've been hearing, I think, just from Jeff and Jordan, is that there could work a simple technical strategies that I can maybe be able to assist with, which help in protection from failure, which may or may not be sufficient, but at least are there. That was Jeff. Ellen is next.
Yeah, perhaps Jeff did address some of the comments. I'm not sure, because I'm not technical enough, certainly on the spot, to understand. But I just wanted to say that, Milton, I'm not suggesting that we be omnipotent. And obviously nobody knows what's going to be 5 years down the road about any of this stuff, nor are there any guarantees. But I am not comfortable with the idea that we can go into something and say that just because we don't know how to guarantee something at the other end means that we can reduce any reasonableness about trying to check out the best that we can for what we do. And I do believe that it is our role to take care of people. I think that Ken's statement about assuming the level of expertise of the end user is absolutely right. Most people, including me, when I buy a domain name, I'm working on the assumption that I can go ahead and build my business and build my website because it's going to be there. Now, if you're telling me that if I can create technical backups, that if the guy I bought it from disappears, I still exist on the web, then that's one thing and that's important. But to just say, well, it's okay to let market factors be out there and let it go out of business like you let a shoe store go out of business, I think is not our responsibility. I think it is our responsibility to take care of things more than that.
Thank you for that. Grant, you're next in queue.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll add my support to what Ellen has said and those who have said it before her. The only other comment I wanted to add was, I guess, in response to Milton's thoughts with regards to auctions, and he will recognise that our neck of the woods can be blamed for, or thanked, whichever way you look at it, for delivering auctions to the telco market and Spectrum in particular. But I think it needs to be noted, Milton, that, again, if you look at the telco example of auctioning Spectrum, that there is a huge amount of additional regulation and control that either go into the auction process itself and or comes on top of whomever becomes the eventual purchaser of Spectrum or management rights. And so it's not an unfettered, unregulated process. And if you look at the process that we're talking about here in ICANN, there is very little regulation, and I think that's how we would wish to keep it. So therefore, to be entirely unfettered in the form of distribution of new GTLDs by way of auction, I don't think is an appropriate comparison with other auction processes such as I've just mentioned with regards to Spectrum.
Okay, Grant, thanks for that. I think we've probably got enough in terms of discussion to allow me to change that. Nobody's arguing, I think, for the absolute abolition of the objective here, but we need to be clear that we're not seeking to have barriers to entry by that. We're not seeking to make life too difficult. We're still looking at stability. I'm looking at something reasonable there, so I will do my best to incorporate that and also see what advice perhaps we can get from Louis in the meantime for the next version, because that would help to know where the existing situation is.
Well, look, could I just suggest that one compromise position that is some kind of a performance bond, which would be uniform, not be as discretionary as what Jeff is talking about. Are any of you familiar with how those are used in utility regulation?
So you put up a bond for a certain length of time, do you, or permanently?
Well, I think we would need to investigate that. I'm not completely sure as to how it worked either, but it has been used in utility contexts, and it bears investigation. The thing I like about it is that it's uniform. You don't have somebody, you know, looking around and saying you're not financially...
Right. Well, it effectively moves it to a third party, doesn't it? Because whoever is backing the bond will presumably be making a judgment themselves as to the viability of the guys who want the bond. It's important. It's a good concept. Moving on, item 10, I think there was just a suggestion, Jeff, in your email for a bit of rewording there. You said please avoid the term bid because it suggests it might be an auction, which Milton might like, but others don't. I'm happy to make the change there. And I think the final thing was just you wanted clarification also about actual administrative costs, and I think what we probably need to do there is simply say that we're referring to those costs that are relevant to the ICANN Secretariat, not to the costs of the putative applicant. Substantive points also there are on 11 and 12. I think we've probably covered the arguments on registry and sponsor failure already. I think probably it may be more useful to link those two points there where we're talking about protection, and certainly I'll make a reference in the next version to the fact that protection may be technically available in terms of zone file transfer. And under 12, we're simply saying we want to have rules that determine when such transfer will take place, which I guess everybody would agree with. We don't need to look at the detail of what those rules would be, given that probably those exist to some extent already. Is that satisfactory, gentlemen, in terms of your comments so far? That's Jeff and Milton.
Yeah, so far, yep.
Yep. Okay.
The main concern is just how we answer that first question about structuring the top-level domain space. I want a very clear no. And I think, I'm not sure how that's going to come out, but I think that's the most fundamental question we have to ask.
Okay, that's on Oracle.
Carrie, to speak, please.
Carrie, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Just a question. I'm really sorry that I'm risking having something rehashed that was already run through, but have you discussed anything about the IDN relationship to top-level domain?
We did indeed. and that took a little while.
I take the giggle to indicate that I shouldn't?
No. No, but the point that you had made and told and spoken to Jeff about, he made on your behalf about Dot Museum and the sponsorship link, etc. So that was made. In the next sort of perhaps 5-10 minutes or so before we finish the call, I'd raise a question at the end there in terms of this point that was raised and called different things on our last call: segmentation, differentiation, and competition, and how we might seek to have free competition, if you like, but at the same time some sort of differentiation. And there we had an example of, if you have an objective of differentiation, would that prevent a bit for .NGO, because that is insufficiently distinct from the aspirations of the new .org, or would we indeed precisely allow that because it would be adding value if .NGO was then more tightly defining what .org is not. And I just wondered what thoughts people had around that. This is based in particular on one concept that came up in from the business constituency and I think also the intellectual property constituency. And it's just really trying to see how that idea would play through, because equally, I think, for those, certainly for the business constituency view, there was also a strong objective in terms of competition. And we're not seeking ways, I don't think the paper was seeking ways to change that. So any views on this this balance, if you like, between seeking differentiation, which is what bidders may or the applicants may naturally be doing anyway to create a namespace that will be attractive to users, but at the same time how that would link to the potential for creating a local monopoly. Who would like to speak on that?
Well, I would, if nobody else is.
Milton, who else? Okay, Milton, why don't you kick off and we'll see what reaction that gets.
Yeah, I think the safest way to approach this, Philip, is that you're not going to find a consensus on this. Basically, there are the bottom-up people like myself who believe that people should be able to propose any kind of entry into the market that they think is viable and go in and compete in that market, and that the market itself will determine what is the appropriate level of differentiation. And there are people like you who want to have more of a top-down framework for determining what is differentiation, what is the appropriate level. And we just don't agree, so I don't think we're going to reach a consensus on that. I'm just saying that rather than arguing for my particular position, because I just don't think we're going to agree.
Okay, that's probably very...
This is Chun. Chun is in the queue.
Chun, have you in the queue? Anybody else? Okay, Chun, go ahead.
Yeah. When I looked at intellectual property constituency's comment, it shows us that sponsored names would be essentially restricted names, because it demands some charters and some procedures to prove the eligibility of registrants for the specific registered domain name. According to any survey on the preference of the domain name registrants, they show up that they prefer to register unsponsored domain name rather than sponsored domain name. Then why are we trying to make out the plan to exclude all possible unsponsored namespaces for future consumers and general users? One of the strong theory to justify the public name only policy is just the differentiation of domain name businesses. Then why consumers' concerns and users' concerns should be completely ignored for the purpose of ensuring the business benefit of plausible outcome of the alleged differentiation theory? I think basically the notion of a business differentiation could be used at the level of a value-added service provided to domain name registrants, but not at the stage of generating new GTLDs. Differentiation business strategy is to be designed by business entities, but successful differentiation policies are to be confirmed and ultimately judged by market consumers. It should never be precluded some categorical names even at the stage of the GTLD name addition, and to introduce new entry barriers to the market which are being exploited by the only expansion policy is very far away from the real notion of business differentiation. And more fundamentally, I'm wondering why we are thinking that ICANN could make a policy of new GTLDs when its possible outcome is to exclude some categorically possible unsponsored names. Who gave such power to enclose the scope of namespace regardless of whether it is sponsored or unsponsored, and ignoring the real needs of users and consumers? Why namespace members are thinking that they could propose any policy that ultimately the introduction of some categorical names could be completely excluded? This is really another kind of mission creep. Nobody can provide such a policy. It's my view.
Okay. So the first point you're making, Chun, then, was that differentiation should be a function of what a business, a registry, or a sponsor chooses to do once that they have a name, and how that is marketed, and who their registrants are, and how they treat them, rather than a function of anything earlier in terms of the choice of the name. Is that the point you're making? Chun, are you still there?
Basically, my idea is differentiation is basically designed by business entities. However, ultimately, it is the notion of a combination of business entity and market consumer size. So in that sense, the differentiation which was used in this text is particularly for the side of business entities, rather than as a combination of the users and business entities.
Okay. Thanks for that. Anybody else want to comment on this debate? We have silence. Okay, well, we're 10 minutes over our normal time of an hour for this call. So with your agreement, I'll call it to an end. I will do a new version of our paper. I'll write it up and get it out as soon as possible, probably next week. And then we'd welcome your comments on that, plus any other fresh thinking on points you think we should be raising but haven't yet done so.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
The conference organizer has left the conference. The conference is now over.